This is a Triple J podcast.
Prescription pills, it was alcohol, it was ice, it was G.
That may be the view of young people, it's not the view of our government.
If I don't meet a girl, it's pretty hard to tell her that I'm uncontactable.
To connect, to have a good time, to dance it off like nobody's watching.
This is going to have an effect for generations to come.
It starts out as a little dig. Maybe you're told it's a bit of an initiation. But pretty soon, it escalates, and it becomes clear they're not just jokes. You're being made to feel like you're worthless and you do not belong. It's bullying. This is the kind of hazing a lot of apprentices go through every single day. G'day, it's Dave Marchese coming up on Hack. We're talking apprentice bullying, and we hear from some who've experienced so much of it, it's forced them out of their job.
Instead of going to work and learning, I was just trying to like survive the day. Just the thought of going to work and, you know, what's going to happen today or what are they going to do today sort of thing.
Yeah, if you've been through this, please get in touch. Like, I want to know, were you bullied out of your apprenticeship? How bad did it get? Message in 0439 757 555. We're also going to ask what you can do if this is happening to you, what your options are. That story is coming up very soon. First, though,
Hack.
The first member of a group of so-called non-citizens in immigration detention has been quietly deported to Nauru.
On Triple J.
Australia does a lot of deals with a lot of countries, and usually when we do, there's a fair bit of razzle-dazzle, big picture opportunities of documents being signed, press conferences with leaders laughing and shaking hands. But not all of our deals with other countries get that kind of publicity, including one that Australia reached with Nauru earlier this year, the Pacific Islands nation agreeing to accept people for deportation in exchange for payment. And that process is now underway. But there's a lot we don't know about the terms of this agreement, like how it could end up costing Australia more than $2 billion. A lot of people have a lot of questions. So what is going on here? And who are these people who are being deported? Well, Ariana Lucente has been looking into it.
Taking an act such as deporting someone is absolutely life-changing. It changes their life, and so we need to know much more about what's happening.
Off the northeast coast of Australia, past Papua New Guinea and Solomon Islands, is the third smallest country in the world, Nauru. And since 2001, it has been home to one of Australia's offshore detention facilities.
Nauru and Manus Island would close under us for the simple reason it's a waste of taxpayers' money through the Pacific Solution.
The Nauru Centre has opened, closed and reopened several times under Labor and Coalition governments. And people have long protested conditions at the facility and treatment of asylum seekers being held there. So why are we talking about Nauru now? Well, in 2023...
The High Court's recent decision making indefinite immigration detention unlawful.
The High Court of Australia ruled it was unlawful to detain people indefinitely in immigration detention. And it meant that a group of detainees being held in Australia, about 350 people known as the NZYQ cohort, were released into the Australian community.
From beginning to end with the NZYQ cohort, there has been a lack of information available to the Australian community.
The case relates to a Rohingya man from Myanmar, known in court as NZYQ, who, after arriving in Oz by boat and being given a bridging visa, was convicted and served jail time for a child sexual offence. But because he was considered a stateless refugee, he couldn't be sent back to Myanmar and wasn't issued a visa in Australia.
NZYQ, a convicted child sex offender, was released, along with nearly 150 others deemed to be in a similar legal situation.
Many of the detainees released into the community after the ruling had been convicted of crimes or had their visas cancelled on character grounds. And earlier this year, the federal government made a deal with Nauru to accept this cohort.
The federal government offering $400 million to Nauru, then $70 million annually, to take non-citizens from Australia.
Now, the first person from this group has been deported to Nauru. He has been granted a visa and won't be in detention on arrival. In a statement, Immigration Minister Tony Burke confirmed the first transfer has occurred. And earlier this month, he told the ABC this deal was important.
Cancelling a visa has to have meaning. We had a situation where for some people, no matter what laws they'd broken, cancelling a visa was meaningless.
The Shadow Home Affairs Minister, Jonathan Dunningham, reckons there's not enough info about the deal, which is expected to cost Australia $2.5 billion over 30 years.
We still don't have all of the details of this deal, and I don't understand the secrecy around it. I think Australians are owed some transparency around this so they know how that money's being spent.
And Greens MP David Shoebridge says there needs to be more transparency about who is being deported.
It's a form of extrajudicial cruelty. These people do not have another safe place to go. Most have been found to be genuine refugees.
Human rights groups are concerned too. Jana Favero is from the Asylum Seeker Resource Centre.
We know that human rights conditions are not met on Nauru. We've started deporting people, which is a really slippery slope, and it sends a message to people that unless you are born in Australia, you will be treated differently.
Hack on Triple J.
Ariana Lucente reporting there. I want to get into this chat a little more because I've got questions about exactly how this agreement is working. And someone who might be able to provide some clarity is a person who's worked within immigration in the past. Abel Rizvi, he's a former senior immigration department official and is with us now. Abel Rizvi, thank you very much for joining us on Hack.
Good afternoon.
Can you explain why this NZYQ cohort is so complicated to deal with? Like, why can't the government just deport them and that be the end of it?
So there are two fundamental problems here. One is most of these people have committed a serious crime, and often a violent crime, for which they would have spent time, substantial time, in jail in Australia. Having completed their time in jail, their visas were cancelled because they failed the character test. However, most of them are either stateless, that is, there is no place for whom, where Australia can send them, or the country that they are from, they are in genuine fear of persecution if they were returned. So there's nowhere effectively for Australia to return them. The High Court decided that these people cannot be held in detention because indefinite detention, the High Court determined, is unlawful.
So how does Nauru deal with this issue? Because if our government is saying, well, these people are too dangerous to be here in Australia, why aren't they too dangerous for Nauru?
Well, that's the fundamental question. Politically, the government cannot keep them in Australia simply because the politics of this is just absolutely awful. So we've managed to convince Nauru to take these people, to put them on a 30-year visa to stay in Nauru for the next 30 years. Who knows what happens after that? And Nauru has accepted that on the basis of a substantial payment.
And why would Nauru accept that? Is it just because they're cash strapped and the money's just too good to refuse?
Absolutely. Nauru used to be a relatively rich country when it had a large amount of phosphate that it could sell, but it no longer has that. And as a result, all of that money was somehow blown, and the Nauruan government now has very little money. Indeed, Australia's payments to Nauru are amongst its major sources of income.
Wow. Okay. And once these people are on Nauru, what happens to them then? Do we have any idea how they live their lives, what services they have access to?
So they're effectively free to live on the island. The Australian government pays effectively for their accommodation and board whilst they are on the island. But apart from that, they are free to live as they wish. They can access jobs if they can get them and so on. Effectively, they can live like a Nauruan citizen.
And do you expect all of this cohort will end up on Nauru?
Possibly not all. The government will pick and choose which of these people it sends to Nauru. It will send those that it thinks are the most dangerous or the most difficult to deal with. There will be others who the government still thinks it has an opportunity to deport to their home country. Those will probably be held back whilst the government tries to work through the processes of trying to deport them.
And just to confirm, are all of this cohort, like all of them have criminal pasts or have served time in Australia?
Most of them will have, yes. I mean, there may be some who don't, but most of them will have, and most of them will have committed serious crimes. It's not a minor crime that the government would be concerned about.
Are there any other options for Australia that we could be considering as opposed to Nauru?
Well, in terms of this cohort, the only thing that we've ever tried is holding them in detention. And we held many of these people in detention for very, very long periods of time whilst we tried to deport them. And it was that the High Court found was illegal. The issue has now become so politically charged that the options available to the government are very limited. The options are limited because of politics, not because of policy. For example, many people in Australia who have committed serious violent crimes complete their sentences in Australia, and once they've completed their sentences, they're released into the community. And we manage those people as appropriate, depending on the circumstances. There's no reason why this group could not be managed in the same way at a far, far, far lesser cost than we are paying. But politically, it would appear that option is not available.
This is Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm speaking with former senior Immigration Department official Abel Rizvi about Australia deporting the first foreign detainees to Nauru in this controversial deal. Hearing from you on the text line, some people saying they're not too surprised that there's not much transparency associated with this deal, that we don't know too many details. I want to ask about that, Mr. Rizvi, because, you know, the government is facing a lot of heat for not telling us more about the terms of this agreement. Why do you think they aren't being more transparent?
Oh, I think there would be an element of this deal which involves actual costs, you know, the cost of accommodation, the cost of food, etc. But that may well be a minor part of the cost. The bigger cost may be the price that Nauru has extracted for agreeing to do this.
Mr. Rizvi, do you expect this issue is going to be a headache for the government for a while? Like, is it going away anytime soon?
I don't expect so. I imagine political parties, asylum advocates, etc., will continue to raise this issue regularly. Whilst ever these people remain stuck on Nauru, this will remain an issue.
There might be some people listening now who are thinking, look, it doesn't matter to us. These people aren't here. It's not bothering us. Who cares where they end up? What do you say to that?
I must say I feel uncomfortable with that. It effectively says, because we are rich, we can force a poor country to accept our problem. That just doesn't feel right to me.
Do we know much about the politics over there, about how it's all perceived by Nauruans?
I think the politics of it would probably be quite difficult. There would be opposition politicians who would say, let's not do this. On the other hand, those opposition politicians probably don't have an alternative income solution, so they're stuck with it as well.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time to have a chat with us. I really appreciate your insight. Former immigration official Abel Rizvi, thanks for coming on Hack.
Thanks very much, Dave.
And if you do want more on this story, you can go to ABC News. There's a big write-up there explaining the context here, because it has been a lot of months in the making, a lot of years even. There's a lot of history to get across. There's also been a comment from a Nauruan government spokesperson who said these settled persons will enjoy freedom of movement, equal treatment, access to essential services in accordance with Nauru's international obligations and human rights commitments. All right, we're going to move on.
Hack. In the early days when I started as a school-based apprentice, I just got odd comments which I thought were banter, but there's a difference between banter and bullying.
On Triple J.
A lot of people who start out as apprentices end up dropping out, and maybe that's to be expected. You start a new job, realise it's not for you, and decide to get out early. But some of those quitting aren't doing it because they don't like the work. They're getting out of their apprenticeships because they're being bullied by other apprentices, by older members of the team, even the boss. I want to know, has this happened to you? What industry were you working in? How bad did this hazing get? Message in 0439 757 555. You can also call up. I'd love to have a chat with you on the radio. 1300 055 36. I'm especially keen to hear from you if you are an apprentice now. Maybe you've been through it, or you've managed to report it, have it dealt with, and you're pretty happy that it's all over. What is the line between banter and bullying? And what do you do if you feel or find yourself in a situation like this? We're going to answer those questions very soon. But first, April McLennan's been investigating.
Things like shooting nails at me from across the roof.
Fresh out of school, Josh started a roof tiling apprenticeship in Victoria.
You know, they'd call me from one side of the roof to the other to walk across the rafters. And then when I'd get there, one of them would nudge me, like just enough to throw me off my balance.
Josh was only 16 when he started his apprenticeship. He says he felt powerless on site.
I felt really small, like these are grown men that I was working around with. Instead of going to work and learning, I was just trying to like survive the day, you know.
While he wasn't physically injured on the job, Josh reckons it took a toll in other ways.
Because I had the, you know, pressure from the parents to get a job, I really wanted to make them proud and stay in the job. But then, you know, it was also making me really anxious. Just the thought of going to work and, you know, what's going to happen today or what are they going to do today sort of thing. Yeah, what wasn't really great for my mental health, especially my first experience into the working life.
Josh isn't alone. Heaps of people have experienced bullying on the job site too.
Comments were made that I don't belong on a building site, or are you sure you're in the right job, or like you should only be in the kitchen making us boys the sandwiches and doing coffee runs and all of that.
Sally reckons she missed out on heaps of training during the first couple of years of her carpentry apprenticeship because of bullying. By the way, that's not her real name. We've changed it to protect her identity.
I wasn't allowed to touch any tools, even to pack them away, unless the boss was there, was pretty much handed the broom and said, "This is all you're good for."
The bullying made Sally question whether she should even finish her apprenticeship.
Like, I understand there's banter at work, but when it kept getting more and more and more derogative, it kind of just, it sat in and it was like, well, maybe they're right. Maybe I shouldn't be here.
It does create a barrier to entry into encouraging people into the industry.
The number of people entering apprenticeships and traineeships hasn't kept up with population growth. Master Builders Australia CEO Danita Wan reckons bullying has an impact.
Any one incidence of bullying is unacceptable, and it is something that the industry has been working hard to stamp out. It doesn't happen everywhere, but it happens enough.
She says half of all apprentices don't finish their training.
Part of the complaints we hear is around bullying, but equally it is also people finding it difficult in their third year of more complex training for apprentices or the lure of higher paying jobs.
So why can job sites be so toxic? Well, Danita reckons the gender divide could be to blame.
When you look at trades, 98% of trade-qualified people are male, and that is that sort of that more masculine, toxic culture that can exist when you have one particular gender. When you have a gender balance, there is far greater stability and less toxic nature in a workplace.
Josh ended up quitting his apprenticeship because of the toxic culture, but he got another gig with his mate's company.
Sort of gave me a fresh perspective on work sites that they're not all toxic and that some of them can be really fun.
Sally also left the company she started with to find a better work environment.
The people I work with and work for, that they really respect me, and a lot of the times they say that I can lift more than the boys on site.
So what should you do if you're being treated badly on a job site? Well, Josh and Sally reckon you got to find someone who has your back.
So I feel like if you can find the one person that you connect with and, you know, you can talk to and vent to, then it takes a weight off your shoulders. A problem shared is a problem halved.
Like if you're feeling nervous or anxious, or you are feeling like you're being bullied, just speak up and speak to someone. And if they don't listen, then take it further. Take it to their superiors or take it to Fair Work. Just don't be afraid to speak up. Being bullied isn't a weak thing. It doesn't make you a weak person.
Hack on Triple J.
April McLennan reporting now. Got so many messages coming through on this one. Someone says, I started two apprenticeships and was bullied out of both. It put me in a really tough state mentally and financially. Another person says, I was a chef's apprentice at a place where I was the only girl. The men picked on you, exclude you, and the jokes that they made regularly about the female heavyweight staff was appalling. No chef gets paid enough, apprentice or not, to be in this toxic, toxic culture. We've got someone on the line with us now. Lyndon is with us. Lyndon, you're an apprentice. Can you tell us what kind of apprentice you are?
Hey, Dave. Yes, so I'm a fourth-year electrician apprentice just based in Melbourne.
And have you experienced any kind of hazing throughout your 4 years? What kind of stuff has happened to you?
Look, yeah, I definitely did experience some hazing. Especially, this was more prominent in my first year of my apprenticeship. You get your small jokes every now and then, which you can, you know, settle with, but some things would be like, I got racial slurs thrown at me. I've also had tools, just my tools kicked around, even, you know, just sort of being treated treated pretty badly, correct? So, yeah, that's what I went through.
Yeah, it's horrible. I mean, how did you deal with it? Was it stuff that you reported? Did you stay at that company? Did it force you out? Or what ended up happening?
So, look, I did try and speak up about it. I set my foot down, set my boundaries. At the time, it was a bit sort of blown off. I did end up just leaving the company altogether, and luckily since then I haven't experienced anything like that at all.
And do you hear, Lyndon, from like other apprentice mates of them going through similar kind of things?
Correct. Honestly, the stuff I say, I've heard way worse stories from others. It's quite disappointing to see.
Oh, look, thank you very much for sharing your experience, Lyndon. I really appreciate you opening up like that, and you're not alone. So many people who are talking about this. Someone says, my partner got lifted up, stripped naked and covered in grease during his apprenticeship. Another person says, this behaviour is one of the reasons I left my trade to work in men's mental health. It's not okay to be bullied. Please reach out to either a mental health specialist or someone you feel comfortable to talk to. Look, let's get into this chat a bit more now with Yolanda Robson, who's director of the Young Workers Centre in Victoria. And that's all about helping young workers learn about their rights. Hey, Yolanda, thank you very much for joining us on Hack.
Thanks for having me.
Do you get a lot of apprentices coming to you reporting bullying or harassment at work?
Yeah, we hear from apprentices every single day who are being bullied, harassed, or just pushed beyond the safe limits of the job. We also see apprentices who are shortchanged, sometimes tens of thousands of dollars, either through wage theft or unpaid TAFE fees that the employer is supposed to cover. And those unpaid TAFE fees prevent the apprentice from going to school to get the formal qualification in the first place, which I'd also argue is incredibly harmful to an apprentice's well-being when they're being so shortchanged they can't afford to keep the lights on or put fuel in the car to actually get to work. And at the Young Workers Centre, we're reading these recent reports that reveal like the cultural vulnerabilities within these high-risk sectors. And I want to flag that high-risk doesn't have to mean dangerous. And whilst like failures in high-risk sectors are rare, they do happen, and it can and does cost people's lives. Nearly 2 in 5 workers admit that they've refrained from reporting safety concerns due to a fear of repercussions or a belief that nothing would change. So this is not just a handful of bad employers or bad work sites.
Yeah.
What we're seeing here is systemic exploitation to a group of people who know that if they call out this behaviour, they'll likely either face a worse reaction or get fired. So you've got this pattern of young workers asking, where do we turn when work's not safe?
I mean, we're hearing from so many people now, Yolanda. Like, I'm sure you can imagine you're seeing similar stories come through your office. I mean, Stephen says, I'm a third-year electrical apprentice. I just left a company because of bullying. Would walk in every day and have my tools stripped or tipped in the bin, ladders shaken when I was on them. And when I complained, they said to just man up. I was let go in the end because I was complaining too much. Are there any industries, Yolanda, that seem to be worse than others? Like if you compare construction to butchery or hospo, is there one that stands out?
Look, I'd love to say that there's one particular industry, but unfortunately it's pretty even across the board. The stats that tell us these issues come up anywhere there's an apprenticeship system, and that includes construction to beauty, the creative trades as well. So we do see the same behaviour among chefs, hairdressers, jewellers, electricians, mechanics, you name it. Whenever there's an apprenticeship system, whenever there's that power imbalance, we're seeing that sort of that hazing culture. So it's not about one industry. It's about a culture that's gone unchecked, unchallenged and under-regulated for far too long. For some older tradespeople, this may have been seen as, you know, toughening up the apprentice. But I think with younger workers and especially women and workers of colour, we're pushing back and saying, no, this isn't a rite of passage. It's actually bullying and it's dangerous and it's got no place in a modern work site.
We've got more messages coming through. Someone says, I'd love to get a building or carpentry apprenticeship, but I've lost count with how many times I've been laughed at when I've approached people. We've got someone else, though, who says, I've been an electrician for years, and I'm proud to say that I've never personally witnessed anything like this. I also like to think that I'd put a stop to it if I saw it, which, yeah, I mean, that's an important element to this as well, is peers calling out stuff and making sure that they're also reporting things that are not right.
right. This is Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm speaking with Yolanda Robson, who's the director of the Young Workers Centre in Victoria, and we're speaking about hazing in apprenticeships, bullying, and the fact that so many apprentices are quitting or being forced out of their jobs because of this harassment, which goes to physical concerns, verbal abuse. Yolanda, do you think a lot of younger workers just think it's normal because it's their first job?
I mean, yes, but I think the apprentices we talk to and assist, you know, apprentice dropout rates sit at 53% in Victoria, and more than half of those who don't finish say it's because of bullying or harassment. So I think part of it is generational. There's still that hangover from the idea that apprentices should just put up with rough treatment. And maybe at some point in time, maybe there were benefits to the job that made it so you could slog it out. But when you combine the fact that apprentices or some apprentices are earning as little as 12 bucks an hour because of the dumb junior rate system we have in this country, like the juice is just not worth the squeeze anymore. I think as well, young people now know the cost of the physical industries, the physical injuries. And that with the burnout and the psychosocial harm that follows you home. Young people, we also know the difference between friendly banter and outright bullying or dangerous behaviour. So this is not that this is just a softer generation or something that we're just putting up with. It's we've learned the difference between a joke and abuse, and we know when those lines are blurred, it can really end in tragedy. And until that culture shifts in these industries, we will just keep losing good people, especially women and diverse apprentices who want to build a rewarding career in the trades, but the environment just isn't safe or welcoming enough to keep them. And when you combine that with like pay below the minimum wage, it's just not worth it.
A lot of experiences, stories coming through on the Hack text line now. Someone says, I was an apprentice mechanic. My boss was also really powerful in the industry. I was offered a position by someone else, but he put a stop to it. And I was told I was never offered it. Lost the passion and I ended up leaving the industry. Someone else says maybe the apprenticeship process just isn't working. Being a tradesperson doesn't make you a good teacher. Is that person's opinion there? And another person says, I did three trades and have suffered huge amounts of bullying that led to self-harm and needing medication and therapy. I am now self-employed. If you or someone you do know needs support, by the way, remember Lifeline is always there on 13 11 14. Yolanda, if this is happening to you, like I'm sure there's an apprentice listening right now who's experiencing some horrible stuff at work, what are your rights? What can you do?
Sure. So first, know that it's not normal, and this is not just how it is or how it should be. So keep a record of what's happening. Write stuff down. And second to that, in terms of where you can go for support, your union is absolutely an option that you should explore. Join your union and reach out to them. If you're an apprentice in Victoria, you should have an apprenticeship support officer as well. So if you're not sure who that is, get in touch with your TAFE teacher or someone at your TAFE, and they can get you in contact with an ASO. In Victoria, we also have an apprentice help desk that can provide advice or refer you onto legal services if you need it. But yeah, just the main message is, you know, in 2022, 2023, 70% of the Young Workers Centre clients were apprentices, and the same stories keep coming up about bullying, harassment, wage theft and unsafe work sites. So we know how common this is, but we also know that there are ways to fix it, and that involves joining your union, having a talk to them, talking to your workmates as well. And when you don't put up with, like, we don't put up with this behaviour in the office, and a worksite is legally held to the same standard as white-collar workers. Yeah. So remember that you deserve to learn your trade in a safe, respectful workplace, and you shouldn't have to put up with abuse to earn a qualification.
Yolanda Robson from the Young Workers Centre in Victoria, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
We've got Joe on the line now, who was a butcher's apprentice. Joe, have you been through some rough stuff in your apprenticeship?
Yeah, I was. I was, just a general exclusion. Worked really hard, really dedicated myself to the job, and just eventually got pushed to the side and given the menial tasks and eventually taken to the side and said, look, we're not happy with your progress and we'll see you later.
Oh, it's the same story, Joe, that we're hearing from people all the time who are like, I did nothing wrong and I loved that job, but I couldn't stick with it. Hey, thank you so much for speaking to us and sharing your experience. I appreciate it. Look, that is all we've got time for on Hack for now. But I, just before we go, I will mention that we have a special podcast going up tomorrow morning, a chat with Australian Olympic gold medalist Saya Sakakibara. Like, she's been riding really high after her success in Paris. But Saya's story is really interesting because she almost gave up the sport before the Paris Games because she was filled with so much anxiety because her brother actually had this life-threatening injury. So we're going to have the full chat on the Hack podcast early tomorrow morning on the Hack Radio Show right here in the afternoon.